Welcome to the Legacy Podcast Series from Chapter 4 Uganda. Visit us at chapter4uganda.org to subscribe, receive a newsletter and updates on our work and that of our partners on civil liberties in Uganda. Nicholas Appiah, welcome to this first podcast for Chapter 4 Uganda. And for our listening audience, maybe we could start by saying, what is Chapter 4?
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited about this podcast to share our story. Chapter 4 Uganda is a civil rights organization that is named after the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. People normally ask what Chapter 4 is. What chapter? Are you a chapter of something else? No, we are an indigenous Ugandan civil rights organization named after the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. That is in Chapter 4. So we are human rights, civil rights defenders.
And for the uninitiated, what is the Bill of Rights?
So Uganda has a constitution that was promulgated in 1995. That constitution is the grand norm. It is the rule by which the country is governed. It is the law that is the basis for every conduct in this country. That law, the constitution, is divided into chapters. The chapter that deals with the Bill of Rights, that captures the non-fundamental rights that are enumerated in international law, is domesticated in that chapter. So Chapter 4 is a Bill of Rights in our Constitution. It outlines freedoms, entitlements, and rights that every citizen of this country is entitled to by virtue of being a human being.
And your choice, and we'll get back to the founding of Chapter 4, but what you're really saying is that you are an organization formed to support constitutional rights, which are summarized as a law in Chapter 4 of the Constitution. And these are basic human rights and other rights allowed by the law. Is that a fair description?
Perfect. That is exactly what Chapter 4 is about.
Are there other rights that are not in Chapter 4 of the Constitution? And if they are other rights, how do you relate to rights that are not captured in the name of the organization?
Chapter 4 of the Constitution contains the bulk of the rights that every citizen is entitled to. But as you said, indeed, there are other rights that are expressed in other parts of the Constitution. Take, for example, the right to vote. Voting rights of people who are qualified to vote are not in the Bill of Rights. It's contained in other parts of the Constitution. If you look at Article 45 of the Constitution, it also acknowledges that there are other rights that are not expressed in the Bill of Rights or indeed in the Constitution itself. But the absence of those rights in Chapter 4 does not exclude those rights from being enforced, because the opening paragraph in the Constitution in Chapter 4 is to the effect that every human being is entitled to fundamental freedoms and rights. So regardless of where that right is expressed, our role is to defend it. We're not confined or limited to the white and black text in Chapter 4. Chapter 4 is just a name. It's just a place. Our work is to defend all rights, no matter where they're expressed.
So what is Chapter 4's story? How did you get to where you are today? Where did the idea to set up an organization to defend constitutional rights come from?
So Chapter 4 is really an expression of frustrations of young Ugandans who are witnessing widespread violations of rights, in particular during elections. When these rights were being abused in the late 2000s, many of us were volunteering our time to go and defend people who were being beaten up during protests, people who were being arrested and detained without trial. On a voluntary basis, we were spending a lot of our time moving around and trying to offer pro bono legal support to these individuals. whether it was protesters who were advocating for better quality of education in the country, or students at the university who were protesting rise in school fees and were being expelled from the university. When we began doing this, we were spread thin. The magnitude of the problem was far beyond our capacity to provide this kind of services. And there were very few lawyers who were willing to volunteer their time for free for such causes. And we wanted to find a structure, a form of organized grouping that could deliver these services in a structured way. And the idea of forming the organization was then conceived in around about 2008. And we began to operate without registration from 2008 up until about 2013. In 2013, we then formally registered an organization with the support of our friends and donors. And Chapter 4 was thus born in 2008 in March. We registered an organization. We began to seek for support. We began to create formal systems to respond to human rights violations in the country. And that was the beginning of our story. The rest, as they say, is history.
And talking about that history, could you highlight some of the highs and lows? You spoke about violence during elections, but the Chapter 4 in the Constitution covers a whole range of rights. What would you say what would you say are some of the highlights of the organization so far in its attempt to right wrongs?
We see our success in the simple stories of individuals whose lives would have been different or worse but for our intervention. We see our success in the stories of students who were expelled from the university but were only able to go back to the university because we challenged those dismissals. And those students went back to school and have now graduated. We see our success in the stories of women who were dispossessed of property by the families of their husbands, who we have defended, and they have reclaimed these properties. We also see our successes in the support offered to civil rights defenders who would have been in jail but for the challenge that we mounted against the injustices against them. We have had many outstanding cases, such as our case in defending digital freedoms, the case of Facebook versus Fred Muema, where a Ugandan lawyer wanted to force Facebook to disclose the identity of an anonymous online activist who by then was called TVO. And we worked with Facebook in a case before the Irish courts to defeat that attempt. We defended people who were beaten and tortured in Arua following a by-election that saw Cassiano Wadri elected MP for Arua municipality. We defended activists like Stella Nyanzi when she was facing a challenge against her own freedom to speak, or what she calls rudeness. We have also challenged several laws in this country. In my account, about 8 laws have been successfully challenged. We lost a few, but we won many others. Our challenge of the Public Order Management Act, a law that severely limited the freedom of assembly and association in this country. Our challenge against the 2013 Anti-Homosexuality Act. We are back at it again. We are now at the Supreme Court. So we have influenced policies, challenged laws, and fought injustices that have made the lives of people in this country a little better.
So would you say, Nicholas, that the work you do goes beyond simply ensuring that laws that guarantee the rights of Ugandans are respected? It also seems to have a cultural and political effect. The laws, for example, on sexuality, laws that affect home life, such as the you mentioned something on divorce. What would you say beyond the law is the place of Chapter 4 in Ugandan society today?
Our primary role is to raise public consciousness about the law and about their own rights, because we believe that if people know their rights, they will hold government accountable. If people know their rights, the quality of their participation in public life is a whole lot better. So we are invested in raising public awareness and conscience and consciousness about fundamental rights and freedoms. By making the text of the law available to people, we have written many simplified guides on, say, for instance, the right of a person arrested by a police officer, on, for instance, the right of a person who is protesting on the streets. So we make these simplified guides to ensure that the public has accurate information about fundamental rights and freedoms, but also about the law generally, so that they can hold their governments accountable, but also they can know their responsibilities as citizens in the conduct of public life. That is what we call human rights awareness and conscience raising. It's a very important aspect of our work. It's a proactive part of our work. But the second part of our work is to document violations, because we believe that accurate documentation of violations first provide an accurate account of history, but also gives victims and survivors of violations an opportunity to seek accountability years after those who are in power, who are powerful, who are abusing their rights, are no longer being protected by the systems that they're using to abuse rights. So we are involved in documenting human rights violations for purposes of historical accountability, but also for the purposes of just keeping evidence in a way that we can preserve it, and when the time is right, seek accountability. So in doing so, we think we are influencing actions of those in public office as well, because if a public officer knows that the protection of the state is temporary and that at some point you're going to have to account for the things you do in public office in the name of the public and using taxpayer money, they will perhaps behave better. So we are also involved in influencing the conduct of people charged with the responsibility of managing public affairs.
So who has access to Chapter 4? Would you say, for example, anyone can walk up to your office who has an issue and get assistance? How do you source the issues that you present before the courts?
So first, our research work informs us of the trends that we are seeing, because our interventions are strategic, first and foremost. We seek to intervene in cases that have broader implications for the society, that impacts a larger group of people. And so our primary admission criteria is to use our own research, what we are seeing and what we are hearing. And once we have identified an issue, we do what we call legal mobilization to speak to those affected, to speak to all stakeholders involved. And once we are agreed that we have captured all the interests of stakeholders and heard the victims, and we can agree on the best way to approach it, we will then file cases to challenge those violations. That's how we come to challenge the Anti-Homosexuality Act. That's how we come to challenge the NGO Act. That's how we come to challenge the Public Order Management Act. But over and above that, we also have people working to report to us violations that they may have encountered. And we will make an assessment if that case is a case we can take on based on our available human and financial resources, or whether going to court is the most appropriate action. People can walk into Chapter 4, present their cases, we'll make an assessment, and where we are able to intervene, we will intervene either through litigation or through other means. Or if we are unable to do so, we're able to make referrals. We have a wide network of civil society actors who specialize in particular branches of the law. We will make referrals to those groups, and the person who has worked in will be able to find help elsewhere. So we make resources available to you to know where you can go. But there are also people who get in touch with us online, on our website, on our social media platforms. People write to us. And when they write to us, we take every effort to try and read every letter, every email, every Twitter message, every Facebook message. The Young Lawyers at Chapter 4 make an effort to try and read all of it, and to the extent they can, reply, and where they can intervene, intervene.
Is there a memorable walk-in that you remember in the course of all the cases you've done? Someone who walked in and presented an issue that ended up becoming an important contribution to the work that you do?
I recall very vividly in 2011, Bishop Zack Niringie, Arthur LaRocque, Richard Sewachirianga, Arinu Dida Avunji, these were leaders in civil society who walked into our office and said they were organizing to protest against corruption. So this corruption protest began a long time ago in something that was called the Black Monday campaign. And they wanted legal representation. They had conceived a civil disobedience exercise to protest the massive grand corruption that was happening at the time. But they were also aware that protests in this country can be met with violence or arrests. And so they wanted lawyers. And so they walked into our offices and presented their program. And we advised them on how to go about it, how to follow the law, notify the police and the authorities. We advised them on their rights. And they were we sent them on their way. And when they went to the streets, as predicted, and were arrested, we provided for them legal representation. And all of them did not spend a day in Luzira prisons. Some of them spent a few days in a police cell, but were never sent to prison, were never sent to court, because we intervened in what we call a first-line legal intervention, and they all regained their freedom. But that simple action of providing legal representation to civil society leaders who were protesting corruption in the country emboldened them, because they then knew from that point on that they had legal representation if they needed it at no cost on their part, and that this legal representation was being done not for any other ulterior motive, but for the purposes of ensuring due process when they encountered any conflict with the law.
As you said, protests are pretty common these days, and corruption obviously has not gone away. Would you say that your next case is likely to be protecting a protester, standing up for their rights before a judge or at a police station?
Oh yeah, we in the last couple of weeks have been involved in representing young people who were protesting on the streets and got themselves arrested. We, alongside other organizations, were providing free legal representation to these young individuals who were appearing before the courts. We work together with Uganda Law Society. We work together with the Women Pro Bono Initiative, the Ubuntu Center for Human Rights, to provide free legal representation. These young people are out on court bail. If their cases proceed to trial, we will represent them, because we believe that they are entitled to due process, and that due process can be offered by us. We will be there to offer it for them. So our next case, in fact, our ongoing cases right now largely relate to protests that arose from the young group of people protesting corruption in parliament. But we're also presenting other people urgent cases. As you know, we are in the Supreme Court now to appeal the Constitutional Court decision to uphold large sections of the Anti-Homosexuality Act. That is also a case that's ongoing. We are also involved in the challenge against the NGO Act. That case is concluded. We are waiting for judgment. We will be back to court to receive that judgment. But we're also involved in challenging, for instance, the Divorce Act. Our contention is that some sections of the Divorce Act are unconstitutional. Many people don't know it in this country. When you want to divorce your partner, you must accuse them of an offense and prove it. Our contention is that fault-finding divorce proceedings are unconstitutional, and that case is in the courts as well. So we are quite busy.
And finally, how does one participate in supporting Chapter 4? I understand the number of lawyers you have at Chapter 4, as well as the financial resources you have at your disposal, are limited. So how does a member of the public, someone who may be listening to this podcast, support the work that you do?
First, let me express my gratitude. Over the last decade of this work, we have seen a growing number of interests of lawyers in public interest litigation. There are lawyers in private law firms who have volunteered their time pro bono to pick up some cases that we are doing. These are lawyers who are involved in commercial law but feel compelled to offer their time to represent indigent, poor people who are facing human rights violations. These lawyers have been writing to us and asking for cases, and we have referred many cases to these lawyers. Many of them want to remain unnamed, understandably because of their other clients' interests. They are involved in a program we call legal brokerage for pro bono clients. We've also seen many young people now interested in coming to volunteer at Chapter 4. People want to get involved in the work. Law students, lawyers who have just finished law school, researchers and journalists. So the interest in public interest work has gone up quite significantly since we began this work. We have now many actors and organizations that are doing similar work, and that gives us a lot of satisfaction. But for members of the public who are hearing us today, you can get involved in Chapter 4's work. Write to us. If you want to seek information, we'll give it to you. If you want to know about the law, we'll provide that knowledge for you. We have received invitations to go and speak at PTA meetings in schools as far as Fort Portal to speak to parents and children in schools about rights and freedoms. So call us. If we have time, we'll come and attend to you, share our knowledge with you. We are supporting civil society organizations across the country with compliance work. If you're an NGO in Moroto, in Arua, facing compliance challenges, we provide legal compliance support from an assessment of the weaknesses in your system to actual legal compliance processes, to registration, to complying with tax laws, to complying with Financial Intelligence Authority regulations. So write to us. We'll be happy to hear from you. Give us feedback on what we are doing. But to those who have the means and the expertise, volunteer your expertise. If you're an IT person who perhaps has a good understanding of digital security, offer your expertise and help people who are in need. If you have a big check, write a check. Give us money. A lot of the work that we do is funded by external groups. And there are really delicate issues you must deal with in getting funding from outside this country. And we would love to see public interest in supporting domestic work for lawyers. Send us a check. Send us money on mobile money. Go to our website and donate. Donate equipment, donate money if you have. This will go a long way in helping people in need.
Nicholas Opio, thank you for being on this podcast. We look forward to speaking to you again.
An absolute honor, Angelo. Thank you really so much. I look forward to sharing more of our stories, and you find them very interesting. Some of them sad, some of them inspirational, but all of it providing hope that even when things look so bad, even when the civic space is closing, there are opportunities to push back, to pursue freedoms. And if enough of us get involved, things will change. I hope that will inspire many people to join this noble pursuit of justice and the defense of fundamental rights and freedoms. It is a question of values, our value as a society, and we must defend those values because we all believe that every single Ugandan deserves to be treated with dignity, with respect, and be allowed to achieve their full potential. If we can all do that, we'll have a better society. Thank you very much.
Thank you.